I'm not a boy, I'm Arya Stark of Winterfell. And if you lay a hand on me, my father will have both your heads on spikes. Now, are you going to let me by, or do I need to smack you on the ear to help with your hearing?
SpecficMedia.com presents Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones podcast with hosts E.G. Holyfield, Christiana Ellis, Chooch, Viv, and Nuchus.
Go, Pete Dracer. Go, Pete Dracer.
Pete Dracer. I like that. Pete Dracer. Well, hey, everybody, and welcome to episode 5 of the Beyond the Wall podcast in association with SpecficMedia.com. I am PG Holyfield. And
today
we are joined by most of our crew, everybody except for Nutty. Nutty had to go away for, she had to go beyond the wall for a while. And,
Oh,
hopefully she'll make it back.
Wait, did she go inside the wall before beyond the wall?
Yeah, she went through.
That's a good point.
Jorn say?
If we're beyond the wall, then she kind of went back in.
Yeah.
Inside the wall.
What did Jorn see her on the map?
She was on the map this week. Didn't you see her, PG?
Really? Wow.
Yeah, if you freeze frame it at, like, you know, 15 seconds in.
Yeah.
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 It's a little dot. That's her.
Hanging out on the wall.
Yeah.
So this past week, a couple days ago, we're recording on Tuesday this week, a day later, and the episode was a little different than the previous one. So just wanted to get an a reaction from everybody. So Viv, what did you think of the episode Sunday?
Shock and awe.
I am.
Yeah, there was some major, stuff that we knew was going to happen and stuff that we didn't expect.
Yeah, there seem to be a few changes, little variances from the text.
Well, one big one.
One big one that I'm sure, again, we don't discuss the episode before we get here and start talking. And I'm sure we all have one main thing to talk about tonight, more than others, but at least that's what I think.
I'm actually not sure what you guys are talking about.
Oh, okay.
Chooch is making the sound effect now.
Ah, yes. Well, see, at the same time, though, obviously that scene didn't happen in the book, but...
Correct.
It kind of fits in, doesn't it?
It doesn't not fit in.
Right.
I think it was implied in the book, though certainly not this early.
I was... gobsmacked. I did not get any implication like that from the book. And had I had more time, I would have gone back and reread the book you're saying later.
Without getting too much into the the later books, I don't want to be, spoiling anything, but I would just say that, what we're seeing now is hinted at in the books, although certainly not this early. So that's definitely new.
Okay. I totally missed that then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the homosexuality between those two characters didn't bother me. I mean, you sort of get that feeling from later on, as we mentioned. My problem is, what the hell are they doing to Renly? They're making him this weak-assed pussy boy.
What are you doing?
Look at it.
You cut me.
It's just blood. We've all got it in us. Sometimes a little spills.
And I don't understand. I mean, he's loved by the people. And maybe, I sort of get what they're trying to do, saying, okay, well, Sir Loras is, pushing him to be this person that your brother's this way and your other brother's this way and everyone loves you. So he's sort of convinced. But... in the books from the beginning, and that was one of the problems I had with one of the earlier episodes, I mean, he's sort of, you've got Robert, the blustering fool and the hard ass, and he's always the one with the funny comment and the, people did like him.
They did.
And it was obvious from his character. And here he's just this silent guy that gets scared when Littlefinger stands up at the tournament and makes a, comment about his sexuality through innuendo.
Right.
And I was just, that scene bothered me just as much. The wing or the eye contact between Loras and Renly, that's all you needed.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been like, okay, we know something's going on here, and man, you don't have to destroy Renly as a strong character or create this different character.
By that, do you mean that Littlefinger didn't have to make the comment, or that they didn't have to have the sex scene?
I mean, the sex scene didn't bother me as far as being a sex scene. I mean, that's fine. I mean, if we're saying, okay, we're just going to be upfront about him being a gay character upfront, you know, instead of later, that's fine. But I think that takes away a couple really big things that they could have played up a lot more later on. Again, we don't want to do any spoilers. So, well,
maybe they're trying to give him more of a dramatic arc, saying, you know, if he comes from this place and then he steps up later, then it's, you know, more character building. And it seemed like it was a good excuse to have one of these exposition pieces where they're trying to get some history in there and, you know, get some people's thoughts out.
Right.
And not only that, it shows, it gives, to me, there was never like a big motivation for something that occurs later that I think we now see the little twinkling in his eye of, oh, I hadn't thought of that, the motivation. Am I being clear enough without giving a spoiler?
Mm. Yeah.
I think so. I see, first of all, just the idea that, you know, that they're gay for each other. I really kind of just bought it. And honestly, the idea that they would just reveal it and make that sort of explicitly part of the story much sooner, I have no problem with that at all. In fact, I actually kind of like that change. What I will agree with PG on is that, you know, we hear Loras say the people love you, but we don't really see that. We don't see any scenes of the people loving him.
Right.
And so I don't know that I dislike what they've done with the character as much as I feel like there's some of it that's being told, not shown, which, you know, I mean, obviously the show is already has to be very exposition heavy, but generally it's being done a little bit better than that is, I think.
Right. Mm-hmm. And another, I mean, this is probably one of the big things that is different between someone who hasn't read the books and someone who has. I would love to see if anybody has any sort of, you know, I mean, it probably doesn't bother anybody that hasn't read the book as far as how Renly's character has been introduced and developed.
Right.
You know, but this is one of the only times that so far where I'm just like, you know, why change Renly's character so much, you know, from the book when it seems to go against, you know, things that happen later. Yeah. You know, so.
Well, maybe again, it's, I mean, it's.
Go ahead. Sorry.
What it is, it's a bit like with Daenerys, where, you know, we had some concerns after the first episode about them changing the tone of her first night with Drogo, but I feel like that's all shaped up pretty nicely since then. So maybe what they have in mind is they just want to show a bit more of an arc for him.
Right. Well, and I think I'm going to harken back to what something Viv said last time, Christiana didn't hear yet, was, you know, you don't need, like we were talking about Sansa, you know, you don't need to, there can be a weak character, you know, she was a weak character in the book. You don't need to make her stronger or appear like she's smarter because you're scared that viewers may not like her, you know, or not care for her. Mm-hmm. This is the same thing, but the other way. You don't need to make characters weaker than they are to show that everybody has this arc. You know, let Renly be Renly.
Yeah.
It, you know, but again, that's just point of view of someone who's read the book. So I'd love to hear from someone that hasn't read the book and see if they had, well, were they just shocked by the whole, you know, homosexuality? Did it bother them? Or, you know, the characters themselves, you know, does it make sense?
I would think that someone who hasn't read the books would just have no preconceived notion about the character at all. And right. So I don't know that they would read it any other way than, oh, that's who Renly is. But as someone who's read the books, I find that I disagree with you a little bit. I definitely acknowledge what you're saying in the sense that, you know, we have Loras say the people love you, but we haven't seen that.
People love you. They love to serve you because you're kind to them. They want to be near you.
But I don't object in principle to the idea of having him start out a little bit more uncertain, a little bit more like the, you know, the baby brother of the family who kind of resents that his brothers don't respect him and that sort of thing. But right. At the same time, without wanting to spoil what going to happen, I think there's opportunity for him to step up. And maybe that's just what they have in mind, is they want to show that process.
I think one of the things in the book that I really liked was his growth in the book was from comic relief to being a better alternative, possible alternative than some of the other people in his family. Whereas here, that appears that they're going for a different kind of arc, and yeah, it may work just as well or better. But
at this point, when I was reading the books, I had only the barest hint of understanding of who Renly was at all. So I didn't feel like they dramatically changed who he was at this point in the book, honestly.
I hate to interrupt this whole conversation, but I have a bigger issue with that scene.
Go ahead.
Go, girl.
My issue with that scene is Sir Loras, shirtless, with the body of like a 8-year-old girl. And if he has been training every day of his life since he could pick up a sword, why isn't he more built? He's holding a shield with one arm, a great sword with another, or a lancet or whatever they're called. He's been doing military training his entire life. And yet Gendry, at what age, is already more, has more muscle definition than Loras does.
And he does a lot of stretching, flexibility.
Yeah. Well, I just think that they could have had him tone up. He had no muscle tone. He had no definition. And that made no sense to me.
I agree there. I mean, again, it was something that, like, I didn't feel like I had a big problem with that. But you're right about it. It doesn't make sense for someone with his build to be as strong as he supposedly is. I mean, it's one thing if they want to say, you know, like, he's lean and wiry rather than big and bulky, but but he doesn't really look like that either.
No, I've got more tone and definition. And that's saying something. And it's just, you know, an aesthetic thing, but it just bothered me because it's almost as if they chose him not just because of his acting skill, but I mean, come on, he could have toned up in time. He could have toned up enough to have more significant definition, but it's almost as if they made the decision to make him more feminine rather than more manly so that, you know, the American public and maybe some other countries, doubtful that they're as closed-minded as some Americans can be, you know, would be able to say, okay, here's the man and here's the girl in the relationship. You know what I mean? Like making that physical choice. He's hairless and he's got no facial hair and he's got the long blonde hair and he doesn't have any like clearly manly, you know, physical characteristics. And then you've got Renly with the facial hair, or had the facial hair, or I guess he still had it in the scene. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. But, you know, other than that, he seemed more manly of the two. And it just irritated the shit out of me that he was so underdeveloped for somebody that even in that scene discussed how I've been training my whole life. You don't look like it, honey bunny. You need to hit the gym a little bit harder. So that's it.
I was just going to say, I think maybe the reason none of this stuff is bothering me as much as some of it has, you know, I guess bothering you guys, is just personally speaking, Loras and Renly never interested me all that much. They're never my favorite characters. I mean, not that I dislike them, but I never really felt like I cared very much about those characters. So honestly, I feel like I'm more interested in the characters the way they've been portrayed so far in the TV show than I was in the books at this point.
Yeah.
So that's maybe why it's not bothering me. The changes aren't bothering me as much.
And I don't have a big love affair for either of them, but I think I'm a very visual person. I think Chooch might agree with that, that I get hung up on visual stuff. So that's just my weird skew.
Well, and that's fair. That's totally fair. But I mean, it's just one of those things where even if it was never, I mean, again, I don't want to spoil anything, but I feel like even if it wasn't in the books, it still completely fits. There's nothing that,
true,
you know, happens in the books that would contradict it.
Very true. And if we're done with that particular scene, Viv's point about the apparent lack of body strength of Sir Loras, a good segue from that was actually to a little bit earlier when we first meet Sir Loras, and the probably one of the better scenes in the episode, which was the Joust, where again we got to see around 300 people, where you got the feeling from earlier conversations there should have been thousands in the city.
Yep.
But the joust between Gregor and the Knight of the Flowers and the subsequent battle and the Hound interceding to protect Loras was probably one of the best action scenes up to that point, I think, in the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just thought it was great. I thought it was well done. Just the perfect ending where Robert bellows and the Hound drops to a knee, which causes the sword to go right over his head.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
That was just like, damn.
Yeah. That was beautiful.
Yeah. Done. And then just how the mountain sort of takes him a second to sort of belatedly realize, oh, wait, yeah, I should probably stop too. Damn it.
But
the mountain is scary. I thought they cast him well. That guy is he's huge, and you just feel like, please stay far away from me. I don't really want to ever have contact of any kind with you. Please go away. but nicely. I'm smiling while I say that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Do you think that they covered the bit about the trick that Loras played well enough? Because I actually didn't catch what they were... I mean, I knew what he had done, but the trick about having his horse being in heat.
Loras knew his mare was in heat. Quite crafty, really.
Sir Loras would never do that. There's no honor in tricks.
No honor, and quite a bit of gold.
I feel like if you hadn't read the book, that would just blow right past you. And
yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know that it's that important, but it certainly... I mean, at the very least, even if you didn't catch... like the implication of what it actually was. I think the idea that maybe he did something that's a little bit shady was certainly that comes across a bit.
Yeah. I mean, without Littlefinger's line, you know,
you don't know,
you know, the, you know, his mare is in heat, then you probably wouldn't have known if you, of course we don't know because we all read the book, but you know, I would doubt that people would have really understood just from watching.
And so just to state it clearly for those that are listening and didn't read the books, what it is that Sir Loras's horse was a mare that was in heat, knowing it was in heat and knowing that the mountain's horse was male. So the dirty trick was he brought in a horse that he knew would distract the mountain's horse, giving him the upper hand in the battle. So that's what Littlefinger said. That's what Sansa was reacting to. He would never do a trick. So there.
And the mountain clearly... blamed his horse.
Yeah, clearly had an issue with the horse.
And he definitely understood what Loras did, which is why he attacked Loras.
Exactly.
But yeah, the near slicing his horse in half was brutal. But yeah, pretty good indication of how strong he is.
Yeah, and I watched one of the little special features talking about like the weapons they were creating for the show. And one of the ones they specifically talked about was his sword, is because he's so tall, they had to make the sword like really like proportionally bigger. Mm-hmm. So even for a big broadsword like that. And so the sword is like 5'6" long.
That's taller than me.
Almost a claymore.
Wow. Yeah. But you know, the implication that you get in the books, and I don't know that you've quite gotten it quite yet, is that mare in heat or not, he very possibly would have reacted like that anyways if he had been unseated. He's just a crazy motherfucker.
Yeah, it seems like it just doesn't happen.
And also that Loras might have won anyway.
Yeah.
Whether that trick was, you know, there or not.
So. Right.
Yeah, that's why I was thinking it's maybe not super important if all the details are clear, just because all it was is the idea that he might be willing to do something a little sneaky to give him an edge.
Yep.
Now, was there anything else particular about that scene?
Oh, we kind of skipped the scene with, at the beginning where Robert is tormenting poor Lancel.
Oh yeah. We can definitely go back and, to that.
Talk about brutal.
Yeah. It's like, you think that's funny? Like, no.
You're too fat for your armor. Fat, is it? Is that how you speak to your king?
Oh, it's funny, is it?
No, Your Grace.
No? You don't like the hand's joke?
It's ushering the poor boy.
You heard the hand. The king's too fat for his armor. Go find the breastplate stretcher. Now!
Your mother was a dumb whore.
Don't like the hands joke?
Your mother was a dumb whore with a fat ass. Did you know that?
Yeah. He does love torturing the Lannisters, doesn't he?
I thought that was a good scene, but it was a little bit later that we had, you know, we'll talk about, I'm sure, his scene with Cersei, which I thought was just amazing. Mm-hmm. But here I thought it was a bit more of, we needed to establish again, you know, that he really is friends with Ned to right. sort of set up how big a deal this whole falling apart they have later. And just to set up that these two guys, they really do understand each other. And so for them to, you know, get so angry with each other later, I think feels all the more weighty as a result.
You definitely feel more of the history between them and that discussion with Cersei later about Ned's sister. And now, you know, reaffirming the connection there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we had just one of the funniest things in the show so far with him about to walk out with his belly showing. just his reaction to that, like if he had done that when he was yelling about the people bowing down to him and stuff.
Yeah.
It's funny.
An inspiring sight for the people, hey? Come, bow before your king. Bow, your shits.
And I stand corrected. He is big enough to play Robert. I just didn't see it before.
Yes.
Well, I think it's just the actor is short, and so it's not, you know, he's not tall, but he has the right sort of proportions. It's just they need to sort of use a little bit of trickery to give him a couple extra inches of height.
Yeah.
When they have him next to like Sean Bean or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I always need a couple extra inches.
Now we can cut this out if it's completely wrong, but the whole line about the breastplate stretcher,
mm-hmm.
did anybody see the night movie, whatever, with the Heath Ledger, whatever that movie was?
A Knight's Tale.
Knight's Tale.
Okay. And Mark Gatty was his. Wasn't there a joke about a breastplate stretcher or something? What was the stretcher they had?
Right, actually. I think there is
some sort of stretcher that they like put in that movie. And maybe it was. I'm just wondering if that was a callback since Mark Gatty was in that movie.
I don't know. Although, isn't the breastplate stretcher line in the book?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
I do.
I don't think it would be a direct callback, but. I think you might be right that there's something similar in A Knight's Tale also. I don't remember for sure.
I don't remember. There's some sort of stretcher, but I can't remember what it was. But anyway.
Well, maybe they made a callback to Game of Thrones.
That could be.
I mean, I remember that scene, but then I also...
Well, which came first? When was the first Game of Thrones book? What year was that?
Oh, hand me the book, Sugar Bear.
I think it was 94.
Really, that early? I guess I read them all much more recently, so it doesn't seem that long.
I don't remember. 97, 94.
Through the book.
1996.
Six.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so the
Knight's Tale is 2001.
Yeah.
So it could have been. Okay. We did, around that time or a little bit earlier, we had the, right before that scene, we had the talk between Ned and Ser Barristan. I always love Ser Barristan.
I'm going to interrupt you, PG.
Absolutely.
I just flipped the book open, flipped it two more times, and it landed on this tell him I need the breastplate stretcher now.
That's crazy.
I was just like, I wonder if I could bam right there. So yes, it's in the book.
Nice.
Rock on.
That was epic. I'm sorry I had to share. I apologize, PG. Please.
I can't believe you interrupted me.
I bow down before you. Please speak.
But anyway, we get, again, the discussion of how great a fighter that Ser Barristan was in his day. Mm-hmm. And again, the idea that all of these men at one time or another may have fought against each other, but they see each other. If they were honorable in following who they were following, then there's no, you know, hard feelings and that sort of thing. But when, you know, like when Ned looks at Jaime and feels that he wasn't honorable, you know, there's a different view on that. So,
mm-hmm.
I think it harkens back to like the Civil War and then people having to get back and resume life with people that they were, you know, brothers and uncles and all of that stuff that they were fighting against during the war. And how do you reconcile that later? And you see that in some cases they were able to, in some cases they weren't.
Right. And just like, I guess the initial, one of the things that Martin was hearkening back to was the War of the Roses. And, you know, same thing. We have, you know, families fighting against families. And, you know, when that was over, they, you know, had to work together. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
But Barristan is one of the few people I think that Ned really does respect. Because he's not all schemey like all the rest of these guys.
Absolutely. He's yep. like, you know, and really, truly honorable and all of those things mm-hmm. that you hope to find in one of the Kingsguard.
You might be the only one, because even Robert, you know, it's like Ned sort of, I think he wants to respect Robert, but he's just finding it so hard at the moment.
Yeah. Huh. He said it countless times. I just want to do what I want to do. I don't want to have to reign. And he doesn't go to the small council meetings. And, you know, I think you're right. I think that Ned's just disappointed in him as a king.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times does he say the Robert I remember
yeah.
wouldn't have done this? Or
yeah. yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Robert I grew up with didn't tremble at the shadow of an unborn child. I thought you were a better man.
After the joust, we can come back to any of that later if we want to, but we have the scene on the Eastern Road, so heading towards the Erie, and again, we go from one action scene to another one with the Hill Tribes attacking Catelyn and Roderick and Tyrion and Bronn and those mm-hmm. guys. So again, get to see Tyrion make that choice, you know, run for the horses, or damn it, I'm going to have to protect Catelyn, aren't I?
Yeah.
Well, and it's such a great balance, too, of that. It's what I love about the character. He's simultaneously, he feels like he should save her, but then it's also, there's a healthy dose of self-interest in there.
Yeah.
Because he knows, yeah, okay, I could make a run for it, but seriously, what would my chances be if I just rode off all by myself?
Right.
Yeah.
And so I think he recognizes, and this is the reason why he doesn't put up more of a fuss to Catelyn, is like, she at least, she wants to put me on trial for murder, which is no good. But at the very least, I know that she knows she can't just kill me.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So if I can just get her, you know, have her keep me alive until my dad and my brother can help me out, that's my best chance.
Absolutely.
Of course, when he realizes where they're going and he says it, you know, sending yeah. me there is a death sentence.
Yeah.
Tell me, Lady Stark, when was the last time you saw your sister?
5 years ago.
She's changed. She was always a bit touched, but now you might as well kill me here.
I am not a murderer, Lannister.
Neither am I.
Well, and I love the subtle... you know, I think I don't remember the actress's name, but playing Catelyn, you know, obviously this is jumping ahead, but you know, the scene when we meet Lysa and Catelyn is just, you can just see in her face, she's going, oh my God, what have I done bringing him here?
Yeah, the horror.
Because, you know, it's like, as much as she doesn't like Tyrion, she's starting to kind of respect him and maybe even doubt a little bit that he did it at all.
Mm-hmm.
But now she's thinking, oh my God, she's going to kill him and start a war.
Yeah. yeah. And she even says that he's my prisoner and it mm-hmm. doesn't matter to Lysa.
Yeah.
Mommy, I want to see the bad man fly.
Perhaps you will, my little love.
This man is my prisoner. I will not have him harmed.
Yeah, and I think that's a subtle change from the book as far as, you know, making Lysa and,
yeah.
you know, you had rumors in the book, but they made her batshit crazy right off the bat.
Well, I mean, and yeah.
That's pretty much how I remembered it.
Well, I think in the book we have Catelyn's monologue where she's able to pick up on more subtle things than we, the, you know, the third person viewer would see. You know what I mean? It's like she sees mm-hmm. how different her sister looks than before, how different she's acting than before. So she sees those things, and that's how she shares with the reader that Lysa is acting crazy.
Right.
And so I think because we don't have access to Catelyn's monologue, or, you know, internal monologue in the scene, they kind of had to do it a little bit more explicitly, I think.
Another exaggeration.
I liked how they, in the show, they're like, okay, we've got the first instance what we know anything about Lysa is the message that she sends to Ned and Catelyn saying, Lannister's killed my husband, and, you know, so she's the impetus for all this stuff that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And Tyrion's like, you haven't seen her in 5 years. She's changed. Mm-hmm. And then you see her, and all of a sudden you see it on her face, like, oh my God, all this that's going on, you know, that started with this letter, you know, have we really fucked up here?
Yeah.
So I thought that was a good progression with, you know, Tyrion saying his line, saying, she's changed a lot. So I thought that was
a similar moment that Tyrion had with Jon Snow too. Like, you're the only one who's been telling me the truth. But, you know, she's, you know, like, yeah, he's right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much you guys talked about it last time, but I think we also just have to agree that as much as we might understand why she felt she needed to, Catelyn taking Tyrion prisoner was just stupid. It was a bad move.
Yeah.
It was stupid in the book, and it's stupid in the movie. And
it was a bad decision. I mean, we understand why she felt like she needed to. It's like, oh, okay, well, you know, once he's back with his family, there's no way we'll be able to get him. You know, his family will protect him, and there'll just be no hope to ever have justice. But, you know, obviously I think even she regrets it relatively quickly.
Yeah, I think one of the points, you know, in both the book and the show so far is, okay, we've got the Game of Thrones. We've got all of these machinations that are going on within all of the houses, and, you know, all these things have been planned for years and years, and it's these impulse decisions that change the landscape, you know, just in a moment.
Exactly.
Jamie pushing Bran out the window, you know, Catelyn doing this, you know, all of these things that just, you know, immediately change. And, you know that, like you said, she's Mama Bear, and she's protecting her kids. So she makes these impulsive decisions that other characters probably wouldn't make, but, you know.
Well, and the funny thing is, too, that obviously you can't hold him directly responsible here, but there's a good chance that if Tyrion had just noticed, she looks like she's trying to be discreet, maybe I should just let her be discreet and have done with it. If he had just left well enough alone, and instead of gloating about, hey, I know you.
Yeah.
She might not have made that impulsive decision.
And I think that we see that in the book. It was only because he drew attention that she felt like she was backed into a corner. I don't know that you got that as much in the TV show, but I've definitely felt that, you know, you see her kind of pull her scarf over her face, but that's really it. Again, you don't hear the internal, you know, oh, crap, I don't want him to see me, and I hope he doesn't see me, and he sees me, oh crap, I have to do something. Oh my gosh, nobody can know that I'm not at Winterfell. I got to do something.
And I thought they did a good job, though, in the show of saying, okay, we have the conversation with Tyrion, with Theon, saying, where's your mistress? Where's Catelyn? And she's like, oh, she's sick. Well, why isn't she? No, she's not here. Why is she not here? Mm-hmm. Then he sees her, and he just can't resist. He's got to stick his nose up there.
He's got to gloat a little bit. He's got, you know.
And he's, you know, he has to know. He's almost like Varys and those guys. He wants the information. You know, he can't just ignore something that's in front of him. So
I think that's one of Tyrion's faults, is that it's like, to the extent, it's like even in the early episodes when he's sort of, you know, probing at the edges of wanting to find out what really happened to Bran. It's like, why are you guys so interested in whether he's okay or not? You know, it really probably would have been better for him and his family just altogether to just sort of, you know, leave that sort of stuff alone.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just in his character that he can't really let sleeping dogs lie. He's got this curiosity. He always needs to know what's really going on. And sometimes that's to a fault.
Again, we've said it 100 times. It goes without saying that I think he's going to get an Emmy nod at the end of the season, but
I sure hope so.
Well, good Lord. But the scene that we talked about briefly with Lysa, where, you know, it shows her and she's nursing this this child that by general standards is way too old to be breastfeeding, especially in court with her boob out in front of, you know, all of her bannermen and all of that stuff.
Well, and prisoners. And
prisoners and everything, yeah. You know, that, you know, it was like, you know that she's doing it in the book, but seeing it was just like, ew, with his little mouth moist. And I actually went and looked it up and he was born in 2000. So he's actually in real life, like 10 or 11 years old. And as a mother, I'm thinking, how the hell could you let your baby play that role? I don't care what they pay.
Well, I think we're pretty sure it was a stunt boob, right? I mean,
it I think legally like, it would have to be.
Oh, yeah. Dear God, I hope so.
I mean,
so.
Even still, though, I think you're probably right that, like,
therapy will be needed.
Well, I don't know about therapy, but at the same time, to be sure, it's unconventional.
Maybe that's how the actor was raised. This may be just...
No. Yeah, imagine that.
They put the ad in the paper.
10-year-olds who are used to nursing.
Exactly. Wow. I literally was like, I need to know how old that actor is right now. Because I needed to be thoroughly grossed out. And he was even older than I thought he was.
Well, speaking of boobies, let's jump back to Theon and seeing... We were discussing whether we thought that person was Roz.
Yes.
And apparently,
I think it was.
I think it is now. The order of events, the fact that Tyrion was with this woman earlier, and then Theon was like, oh, you need to see Roz. That's why it threw me off. But I think after that scene, you get the idea that, that's Roz.
We jumped back to episode one and
it's Roz.
That's Roz.
Yeah.
Ah, there
Her
you
name
go.
Is Esme Bianco, the actress's name.
She's very, very pretty.
She's got some nice pictures out there, PG.
She does.
Some assets.
Lily Allen and now?
Esme Bianco.
Esme. But get some male frontal nudity. So that was...
Yeah. You're a very serious boy.
I'm not a boy.
Oh, yes, you are. A serious boy with a serious cock.
That was exciting for me. I know that.
Wow.
Anyway.
I will say that I do like that they're spending a little bit more time on Theon than
yes.
the book had at this point.
Right.
Just because obviously he, you know, again, no spoilers, but he becomes more important later.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's good to have, establish him a bit more.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one of the editing decisions I just don't understand, because they did such a bad job the first couple episodes of not even bringing up his name. And most people, including, people I had over this past Sunday to watch a show who haven't read the books. And, you know, when they saw not this episode, but the one before, they're like, oh, I thought that was Rob's brother.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm like, nah, they did a bad job of that. So, you know, why they didn't at least give him a name early on and then spend so much time with him, or more time and having multiple characters describe who the Greyjoys are and the Balon's Rebellion and all of that. I just didn't understand why they did it that way. But I, like you said, Christiana, I'm glad that they're doing it now and giving him more of a role in the show.
Mm-hmm. I'm fine with him getting more screen time, but I feel like they're pushing this you're a prisoner thing really harder than it needs to be pushed. The last episode, it was like 3 different characters mentioned it. And in this one, mm-hmm. now Roz is mentioning it. It's like, I don't know. It feels like it's being shoved in my throat. It's
right.
A little too heavy.
I would agree with that, because, I mean, in Westeros, this was normal practice.
Exactly.
You mm-hmm. had wards in, you know, almost every house. You know, from other families.
Oh, no, we got 2 instances this, because the Meister, when he's given the lessons to Bran, mentions it.
Mm-hmm.
Failed rebellions and all that, mm-hmm. and then Roz. Yep. But I don't know. It seems like they're pushing it too hard now. They're overcompensating.
Weren't Ned and Robert both wards of John Aaron?
Yes.
And was it because of war?
A ward is not necessarily...
It's not necessarily a prisoner of war, but I wonder if that's confused some people that haven't read the book. Because
I think that's maybe why they're pushing it a little bit, is they want to make it clear that, you know, it's not... He's not just like an adopted kid. He's not a bastard like Jon Snow. Technically, what he is a royal hostage. You know, the Greyjoys behave because they know that their only son is you know, hanging out with, you know, up in Winterfell.
And he's not Robin to Batman. Wow, I thought that would get a better reaction than that.
I was just kind of stunned because it just went right over my head.
You guys can cut that because I thought that was a funny joke.
And honestly, when you first said it, I thought you said robbing the Batman. And I had processed that. It's like robbing the Batman.
Went to Batman.
Oh, I'm so leaving that in, motherfucker.
You have to leave it in. I mean, no. a joke that is just results in stunt silence, that's perfect. That's gold. So since we're not necessarily proceeding according to strict chronological order, how about the spy-off between Varys and Littlefinger?
That was great.
That was pretty fun.
But enough about me. How have you been since we last saw each other?
Since you last saw me or since I last saw you?
Now, the last time I saw you, you were talking to the Hand of the King.
Saw me with your own eyes.
Eyes I own.
Council business. We all have so much to discuss with Ned Stark. But you know something, I do believe that I have seen you even more recently than you have seen me.
Have you?
Yes. Earlier today, I distinctly recall seeing you talking to Lord Stark in his chambers.
Was that you under the bed?
And not long after that, when I saw you escorting a certain foreign dignitary? Council business?
What are you two conspiring about? Well, whatever it is, you'd best hurry up. My brother is coming.
To a small council meeting?
Disturbing news from far away. Hadn't you heard?
It was a great scene, but it's some of the scenes are a little over the top. Like you mentioned earlier, probably the best scene in the whole show was Robert and Cersei talking to each other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just you got the anger, the possibility of the love they could have had. All of this, you know, emotion, and then you just got these two guys just, you know, hamming it up. Mm-hmm. And, it was a good scene, but I just, again, some of the choices for some of the characters are...
Well, still love Varys, partly just because he's so good at what he does, but also just generally because he's so hard to figure out what's his real agenda.
Yeah.
Because... just as soon as, you know, he's confirming to Ned that, you know, it's like, I came to you now because I wasn't sure I could trust you before. And I have to let you know the king is doomed unless you can save him. And we think, oh, okay, so he's really on our side, you know, our side.
I've been in the capital a month. Why have you waited so long to tell me this?
I didn't trust you.
So why do you trust me now?
The Queen is not the only one who has been watching you closely. There are few men of honor in the capital. You are one of them. I would like to believe I am another, strange as that may seem.
But then there's this whole thing where we see him meeting with Sirio and talking about, you know, you guys, we're going to be at war here soon. You guys need to get over here. And so we're saying, wait, what?
Are you talking about with Master Illyrio? Mm-hmm.
Yes. Oh, did I say Sirio?
Yeah.
Yes, Master Illyrio, who was the guy that Viserys and Daenerys had been staying with before they went off with the Dothraki. Right.
Okay, I do have a question about that scene. In the books, do you ever know who the second person is?
You know, I was trying to figure that out, too. I didn't think so.
I don't think they had ever like made any sort of connection to who that second person was.
I
was just trying to say, oh, was it, you know, did George R. R. Martin have that as Master Illyrio the whole time, or did they just decide they needed to show a second person? So that made sense. And it didn't matter. I was just trying to remember if that was how they did it in the book or
Yeah, I don't remember either, because I think at that point in the book, I was still sort of lost in all the names. And so it's like, even if they said the names, it wouldn't have necessarily meant anything to me.
Being told from Arya's point of view, if I remember the scene correctly, she wouldn't have known who Illyria was. So she wouldn't have been able to name him.
Yeah, I got the feeling she didn't see. She sort of got, you know, the form of Varys, why she said, oh, there was a fat guy.
Mm-hmm.
But didn't really see either one of them very clearly, but just had the voices and what they were saying and getting confused a little bit about what they were saying, which I thought they did real well.
I had a hard time seeing who it was.
Yeah. I'm going to butterfly back to something that I started to say earlier, and it was, again, the scene with Lysa and the breastfeeding. And I just, I loved Peter Dinklage as Tyrion. He knows that Lysa is not as she used to be. He knows that she's pretty off. And as we're watching Catelyn's reaction to her sister's insanity, the look on Tyrion's face, too, was just like, is this really happening? It was like shock and horror and part amusement. And he just like was able to portray so many different emotions while he was afraid for his life and what this was going to mean. I just thought that that was such a brilliantly played scene, as creepy and gross as it was with, you know, the kid. And he, wow, what an actor. He does that very well.
Mm-hmm.
Just again, brought me just amazement at Peter Dinklage. And I think that he is likely going to be one of the all-time greatest, plucked out of, you know, who would have thought, to be like a huge star if possible. I think Hollywood will be able to look past his height finally, because his acting in this is so phenomenal.
Well, you know, he's been doing pretty good. I mean, he was in The Station Agent, was the first, you know, like starring role. And then, of course, he had the bit part in Elf. But, you know, he was also had a significant role for one season of Nip Tuck. Mm-hmm. He was in both versions, incidentally, of Death at a Funeral. And so I think he's getting some recognition, but you're right though, that just because he is a little person, it does present some casting difficulty, because there are certainly some characters where it won't matter, but because it's just something a lot of people aren't used to seeing, any character you cast him as, it sort of instantly almost becomes a defining trait of that character. Just, it can't help but be.
Yeah, I wonder how many screenwriters right now are trying to write scripts with a role for a little person. So.
Yeah, you have to acknowledge it.
I hope that he's going to be kept busy with this show for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, absolutely.
Didn't he play, I know he played a romantic lead on a sitcom. I want to say it was 30 Rock. Did anybody else see that?
Yes.
It was 30 Rock. Yeah.
I fell so in love.
That was the one where Liz Lemon kept like getting confused whether she liked him romantically or liked him because he was like a kid.
Yeah. Oh, I just adored him in that. I was like, oh, I want to date him. Wait,
I'm
married.
If you guys haven't seen him in The Station Agent, you really should. It's a wonderful movie. That was the first thing I saw him in where I was just like, this guy is amazing. I'm just, you know, astounded. So definitely check that movie out if you guys haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I've had that recommended by a few other people.
Add it to the queue when Game of Thrones is over and we turn Netflix back on.
You were jumping around. I want to jump back to just one line after the Hill Tribes attack and Tyrion kills his first man, and Bronn, who hopefully in the show he'll be as big. You could already see the relationship building. You know, he comes over and he's like, your first kill? You need a woman. Nothing like a woman after a fight. And Tyrion looks over at Catelyn.
You need a woman? Nothing like a woman after a fight.
Well, I'm willing if she is.
That was just incredible. That was so funny.
And I think she actually did a good job of showing her dismay at that little moment, too. As much as you can after you're, you know, recovering from almost being murdered.
Mm-hmm. Well, right. It's just kind of like insult to injury, in the sense that it's like she's in shock at everything that has just happened, and she's maybe just starting to come to her senses and think, oh, wait, okay, I'm okay. And then they just insult her.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, she had just recovered enough to grasp that they had insulted her.
Definitely not being treated like the lady of the manor.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely like Bronn as they're showing him in the show. I think the actor's playing him well, and they're setting up his relationship with Tyrion pretty well.
Yeah.
We mentioned the Arya running through the dungeon and hearing Varys with Master Illyrio. She ends up going around, and she has a great moment where she, you know, runs into the guards, and they don't want to let her in, thinking she's a boy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they say, do I need to smack you on the ear to help you hear? And then she turns that back on them. They're just okay.
My father is Hand of the King. I'm not a boy. I'm Arya Stark of Winterfell. And if you lay a hand on me, my father will have both your heads on spikes. Now, are you going to let me by, or do I need to smack you on the ear to help with your hearing?
Yeah, that and must...
What a great little actress she is.
Oh. Gosh, she's great.
Maisie Williams.
you finally had to look her up and know her name.
I looked her up last week because she just charms me.
The one minor disappointment to me was I had expected her as she was running to be saying, you know, swift like the wind.
And yeah.
All the little serial lines.
All the little lines.
Yeah, we haven't seen that. I don't think we saw that aspect of it in the training as much as she took from it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, we saw her doing the balancing and chasing the cats.
So if she does do that later, which is something that I was so charmed by when she was doing stuff that needed, you know, silence or agility or whatever.
But I think it was all in her head, right? So maybe that's why they're not. I thought it'd be cute if she would whisper it under her breath.
Yeah, those were things that Sirio taught her, like how to, you know.
Right, but I mean, in the book, she was thinking it. She wasn't saying it.
Oh, no. It was her insides, yeah. Her insides, good Lord. That's the technical term, people. Her insides.
Inside voice.
I'm not a writer. So are we ready to hop to the scene with Robert and Cersei?
Sure.
Yeah.
We've kind of touched on it, but, you know, I actually had to go back to the book because it was so familiar that I felt like I'd read it before, but none of the chapters, you know, are from their POV, and they were the only two in the room. So...
Mm-hmm.
I didn't reread the book. Did it seem very familiar to anyone else?
Well, I think what they did is they took some bits and pieces from both of those characters from other scenes, and they kind of assembled them into this new scene. So I don't think there was a directly equivalent scene, but it certainly had a couple of things, like the whole idea of Robert has forgotten what Lyanna is that... Lyanna had forgotten what she looked like. I think he said that to Ned.
Right.
Before.
You want to know the horrible truth? I can't even remember what she looked like.
So I think like that detail, for example, I think was in the book, but in a different scene. And I think there was a couple of other beats in the scene that were like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But in general, I think it was a new scene. And I just thought it was amazing because it was the first time in the show and in the story where we as the audience are given a picture of, yes, Robert is a spendthrift and kind of a buffoon and, you know, doesn't want to make any important decisions. And yes, Cersei is kind of a, you know, twin-cesting, scheming bitch. And but at the same time, we get, first of all, a larger sense that both of them take the responsibility seriously and recognize that as much as it means personal sacrifice for both of them, it kind of needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And that they do actually kind of take it seriously.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like when Cersei comes in and, you know, he's saying, I suppose you'll want me to appoint Jaime as the new hand. And she says, no, he's not serious enough. I mean, because she's realistic that, no, Jaime couldn't do it.
Mm.
Without a hand, everything will fall to pieces.
I suppose this is where you tell me to give the job to your brother, Jaime.
No, he's not serious enough.
You wouldn't want to do it.
Right.
And so, you know, they have this conversation, the two of them, as adults, mutually acknowledging that their situation is not what either one of them would have chosen, but they recognize the need to kind of make it work anyway. And
right.
What we also get the sense of, I think, is that it's such a tricky balance that it's quite possible that someone else who might, you know, on paper be a better king might not be able to hold it together the way Robert has.
Right. And I think they also did a beautiful job of showing, I mean, it was the first scene that I can think of in the show, and I'm not going to try and remember from the book, where they weren't spitting venom at each other. They weren't like being really nasty to each other or walking out as the other one's talking. And it was the first time that I think we saw them just communicate without the bitterness. And if anything, a little bit of there was a lot of apathy in what they had hoped for and what they ended up with. Like they've just resigned themselves to it after all these years, you know, it's been held together with hate and all this stuff. And then of course, you know, that they're talking about their marriage, not just the realm and all that stuff. So mm-hmm. I thought that that was a very beautifully performed, executed little dance that they did with their conversation.
Although that mm-hmm. at the end, when, you know, she brings up the sister and then basically asks, you know, did I ever have a chance? And when he says no, I thought you could tell, you know,
that it's done.
She was, yeah. And then of course she says, yeah, you know, I feel nothing, but I think it was pretty apparent that she'd kind of put herself out there a little bit and,
mm-hmm.
and that it hurt.
Yeah.
Yep.
As it would.
Was it ever possible for us? Was there ever a time, ever a moment?
No. Does that make you feel better or worse?
Doesn't make me feel anything.
But at the same time, I thought it was great that, I mean, the performances in the scene were amazing, but I thought it was great that Robert is honest with her, but at the same time, there's an awareness of her feelings.
Yeah.
You know, he's not going to lie to her, but, you know, when he asks, does that make you feel better or worse? I mean, the implication is, you know, you asked me and I answered, but I didn't say no to hurt your feelings.
Right. Yeah. And it's the kindest we've seen him be to her, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And I think he needed another confidant because he was so upset with Ned.
Yeah.
Although I think, you know, we hadn't really talked about that at all, that whole aspect of the story, where this is, again, I think it is sort of the quintessential example of Ned being honorable to a fault.
Yeah.
It's one thing to stand on principle. It's another thing to upset the whole apple cart.
Right.
Because, and that's another thing we get from the scene with Robert and Cersei, is we see what, from Robert's perspective, is that, you know what? From their perspective, it probably really is the right thing to do.
Yeah.
As much as it's distasteful, it's kind of like the whole rest of the small council says, is like, listen, it's not like we enjoy the thought of going and killing her. Maybe Robert does.
Yeah, but, he sure seems to.
But at the same time, it's not like we enjoy it. But, you know, what's the alternative? We let them get the army together?
And it does seem like splitting hairs after all of the things, all the people, all the death from the war to... Mm-hmm. put Robert into power in the first place. You know, you're going to get all wrung out of shape over this when all it in theory would do is preserve the realm and keep the crazy Targaryens out of power. It does seem like he is, you know, a little too wrapped up in that. Although I can understand not wanting to kill, you know, what Daenerys is, what is she, 14 at this point? Mm-hmm. And pregnant with a baby.
I got a little bit different. I didn't feel this at all in the book, but I definitely felt that, you know, before that scene, we had the scene where Yoren says, your wife took the imp.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I got the feeling that, yes, he did disagree. He, you know, because he had already said when they were out in the field on the way to you know, King's Landing, that don't worry about the Targaryens. But I got the feeling that he was looking for an out, that he was, I need to go save my wife. I need to go. I need to get out of here. And this is an opportunity for me. I can stand on my honor. I can give him, you know, the quit being the hand and get the heck out of here to go find Kat.
Yeah.
So I got a lot more of that feeling from that scene than him just being honorable to a fault, which may or not be what Martin intended in the book, but that's sort of what I got from the show.
That's exactly what I was wondering, if that was just an out.
That's a good point.
Well, that is a good point, and that might be part of it, although I can't help but think that even if that was informing his decision, it was still a kind of a dumb move.
Yeah.
Because when he's the hand of the king, he has a lot more influence over what's going to happen as a result of all of that.
Yeah.
Whereas if he resigns, then all of a sudden Jaime says, gosh, you're not the hand of the king anymore. You're just the lord of somewhere very far away.
Right.
Stay back, sir. This is the hand of the king.
Was the hand of the king. I'm not sure what he is. Lord of somewhere very far away.
Oh, man. And that's a great segue to the last couple scenes in the episode.
Yeah.
You know, Ned and Jory, he says, okay, we need to gather the children, have all the guards except for the best two besides Jory come with me. Have Littlefinger convincing him to go instead of leaving right away. Just delay a little bit and let's go see this other person that John Arryn's supposedly visited. And then we have the climactic scene at the end of the episode. One thing I really like in the episode, we have the three main action scenes, the three battles. And they were so different and just show the different type of combat and you know, war and things that you have in this world. You've got, you know, the joust, which is this, you know, organized and supposedly following all these rules, even though Gregor doesn't really follow the rules. And then you've got the hill tribes that are, you know, attacking the way that they attack, the defense of Catelyn and that sort of thing. And then you've just got this, you know, this battle at the end of the show with just poor Jory.
I know.
The scene last time with Jory and Jaime talking about how they at one point fought side by side on in the same battlefield.
Yep.
Which sort of just made even more of a connection between those two characters, lead to this.
But it was a great callback to that because Jaime says, or Jory says, I almost lost my eye, or Jaime says, didn't you almost lose an eye, or something like that. And then Jaime, you know, puts the dagger in his eye.
Right.
We've met before, you know.
Have we? Strange, I've forgotten.
The Siege of Pike. We fought side by side one afternoon.
That's where you got your scar.
Aye. One of the Greyjoys nearly took my eye.
Vicious sons of whores.
They like the bloodshed.
They stopped liking it at the end.
You know, different than the book because there's a lot more, people on horseback. I think Jory, you know, Ned was trying to get Jory to ride away, and then the big, you know, Jory comes back instead of running away to try to save Ned, and, you know, so there was a lot, it was a lot different, but I loved how they did it.
And, yeah.
Oh, man, the spears going through this guy's was bad, was horrible to see. And something you didn't get, I can't remember. Was there direct combat between Jaime and Ned in the book?
I don't think that's so. How it played out.
I think it was, you know, a lot of stuff going on, but not like it was on the show. And I was happy to see it just because, foreshadowed in the earlier episodes and then, you know, builds up and it was great.
I may be wrong, but what I kind of remember from the book is that Jaime actually kind of rode off with the sort of implication of, I'm going to leave you alone, but who knows what my men might do.
Right.
And the men kind of swarm him. And I think I thought that Ned actually injured his leg like when his horse fell over or something.
Yes. Yes, that was how he was injured, was the horse falling on top of him. Of course, they weren't riding horses, so they didn't have that. But I do believe that, like you said, Jaime says, I think the line about, you know, leave him alive but kill everybody else was, you know, not there. But that was sort of what Jaime did. He was like, you know, I'm leaving, and boom, you know.
Yeah, and honestly, I think I like this version of the scene better. I think it's better.
Oh, yeah, I did too.
Yeah, you know, what I was going to say is I thought that his leg was broken, not stabbed. And then, of course, in the book, there's a lot of his anguish with his cast, and now he's not going to need a cast.
Well, it might have a broken leg. So, I mean, that spear went right through his leg. Who knows?
He's not going to be able to put any weight on it.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what happened to the bone when that thing went through. Good Lord, that was harsh.
That was fierce.
And I thought Jamie was going to cut the guy's head off.
Oh, my God. When the look of anger on his face when he realized, I'm not going to get to kill Ned right here, right now. I don't get to swing. Well, not maybe he didn't want to kill him.
Yeah.
Because then he wouldn't be able to get Tyrion back. But you could tell he really wanted to slice him somehow.
He wanted to test, you know, he wanted to test him in combat. Yeah. See who could really win.
Yeah.
I thought that's what it was. It's not that he wanted to kill him. He wanted to win.
Yeah.
He wanted to prove that he was better. Because that was the whole thing, is that he never got to fight Stark in a tournament.
Oh, right.
Because, Ned didn't fight in tournaments.
Oh, and Ned had mentioned how clear his armor was.
Yeah.
I pick my opponents well, or you pick your opponents well.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. So there was this whole rivalry thing of, you know, Jaime wanted to beat Ned. He wanted to defeat him, even though he knew better than to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And so when it was interrupted and the fight didn't get to proceed to its true outcome, he was pissed.
Yep. Dude's lucky to be alive.
And Ned had said, you know, to Jamie, you know, I don't fight in tournaments because I don't want my opponent to know what I can do. Mm-hmm. So that was Jamie's chance to, okay, I'm going to learn what you can do.
Yeah.
And it was a great fight. Well,
and the interesting thing too is, I said this before, but I'm going to say it again. I like Jamie a lot better at this point in the show than I did at this point in the books.
Yeah.
In this point in the books, I pretty much just felt like he's just a straight up villain antagonist.
Right.
That might have some interesting qualities. Mm. But in the show, I mean, to be sure, he's doing things that are bad for the Starks, who are sort of ostensibly our hero characters, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, when looking at the different chapter names, they're almost all the chapters are theirs except for Daenerys and Tyrion. The rest of them are all Stark chapters. So, yeah,
well, did we even have Tyrion POV chapters in book one?
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay. I couldn't remember. At the same time, though, even though he's obviously done some bad things, all we have to do is, kind of flip the perspective to say that he is interested in protecting his own family. And so, like, what he's doing here is like, yes, we're sad because, you know, oh, Ned's hurt and Jory's dead and he's, you know, killing people. But if you think about it from Jamie's perspective, he's saying, I mean, because Ned says that Kat did it on his order.
Right.
And so he's thinking, you or your wife have taken my brother prisoner off to God knows where. Yeah. We don't even know where at this point. And to try him for murder? What are you talking about?
Right.
And so he's basically, you know, comes and confronts Ned and says, what is the meaning of this, essentially? And Ned, because he's honorable to a fault, doesn't say, let me get back to you on that. I only just heard myself.
Yeah. Crazy.
No, I did it on my order. And then Jamie says, oh, really? Well, guess what? These guys are going to do on my order.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, when he rides off, that's what he says is like, my brother, Ned, you know, my brother Stark, I want him back.
Yeah.
That's what it's about for him. It's not just about punishing Ned for being a Stark.
Right.
There's a little bit of that.
Oh, yeah.
It's a bonus.
To be sure, he's not an entirely good person, but I think he is much more interesting and likable at this point in the show than he was in the books.
Mm-hmm.
But so obviously, we leave, you know, the action has kicked up a notch with this episode, and we leave in lots of interesting places, you know, Tyrion in the sky cell, which looked great, by the way.
Oh my gosh, they did that. They did a really good job on that. Yes, they did.
Yeah.
I love the throne and the eerie, throne.
Oh, it was so cool because that big throne room and just the whole castle generally really gives this impressive sense of, somebody went to a lot of trouble to have a castle out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And so, and it's like the throne room. It's really fancy for having no one in it.
Yeah.
And they showed a longish trail to get up to the castle, mm-hmm. but they certainly,
right.
other than in passing mentioning, they say it's impregnable, was the great line, you know?
Yeah.
The eerie. They say it's impregnable. Give me 10 good men and some climbing spikes. I'll impregnate the bitch. I like you.
Right. Which is a great line. But other than that, you know, in the book, they went to lengths of showing just what an arduous journey it is to get up there.
Mm-hmm,
there's multiple places where they have to rest, and it gets steeper and steeper as you go.
And then you use horses. You know,
they showed how defensible it is.
Yeah.
And you didn't get any of that.
And at one point, Catelyn had to leap across, and it was, you really didn't
they get that. They were at the bloody gate, and then boom, they're in the castle.
Yeah.
So let's move on. We had our first listener contest this week, and we will be releasing this in a timely fashion as opposed to our last episode, which at the time of this recording hasn't been released, but I put the shout out on Twitter about our contest, which we've been doing just between ourselves the last few weeks. But
where would people get those updates on Twitter?
I wonder where they would get that. Well, you could be following specficmedia.com, pgholyfield.com, and there you guys give your Twitter IDs as well.
For all things related to the Beyond the Wall podcast, you can follow at BTW Podcast. And to follow me, it's at Vivid Muse.
And Chooch is Chooches. Mm-hmm. And then Christiana has just a great, you know, the best Twitter handle ever.
It is pretty good. At Christiana Ellis.
But yes, so we put the word out before the few hours before the episode, and this week's questions were, Viv?
How many deaths and how many dresses for Sansa?
Yes. And then after I thought that was such a great question, I went back and looked at one of the earlier episodes, and she wore the same damn dress all the time. I thought they were actually changing her clothes, but no, she was wearing that same dress that she was wearing up in Winterfell.
She's always changing clothes.
Maybe different layers or something, but still that weird looking tassel-y thing she's got. So I was just like, damn, that was a stupid question.
Well, who knew? That's part of the fun of this is we aren't thinking ahead to figure out, well, what would be a good question? We're just kind of going, oh, this week, this sounds kind of fun. We had Christiana with 6 deaths and 2 dresses. We had Nutty with 2 deaths and 2 dresses. Chooch had 20 deaths and 3 dresses. PG had, of course, 1,000 deaths and 3 dresses.
At some point, I'm going to be right.
And I had 4 deaths and 3 dresses. And I'm just going to tell you, I'm not going to be the one that counts 1,000 corpses. So if it ever gets over 500, someone else is going to have to take over counting. And we actually ended up with 20 deaths and 1 dress for Sansa.
I was so close.
That was pretty good. I think that's pretty good considering that the number of deaths was so confusing in this one and just guessed that it would really be that many. I think that's pretty impressive.
Yes.
Well, we did not count the tourney horse because based on the rules that we had before, if it's not a named pet or animal, we don't count it. So the horse didn't count. On the King's Road with Kat versus the Clansmen, I counted 11 dead. I was counting them with my fingers as they were fighting, and then also did an aerial view ground count of the corpses. And at the brothel, it was hard to tell from hits and swipes, so I couldn't really do a finger count. But I was able to count 9 on the ground from the views that they gave, and Chooch separately verified all of those. But he still lost because he went over on the dress.
And there was, since there was only 1 Sansa scene.
Yeah, and that's the rule is that who gets closest without going over. And, well, if nobody...
Yes, we play the Price is Right rules with you can't go over, so...
Yeah, and even though there were people that had lower deaths, so they wouldn't have gone over, everybody guessed at least 2 dresses, so we all went over on the dress side.
There you go.
But I'm happy to announce that we do have a winner from our listeners.
Very good. Meaning I have to give them money.
You have to give them money. A $25 Amazon gift certificate.
So, because I didn't explain it, we have a poll on the website, and which we will be using for each week's episode.
I will be giving away a $25 gift certificate, unless we somehow get, you know, some sponsorship between now and then before the end of the season. But, you know, if not, then I will be putting that up. And so anybody that guesses, you only get one guess. Fill out the form, submit. Viv is collecting them, and we'll announce the winner at the end of each episode. So right. Who won this week?
Skip and Sensi with 10 deaths and one dress. Oh,
very good.
Hooray.
All right.
Yay. Congratulations. Woo. He also actually was the only person. We had three people enter, which I think is pretty good considering how late we went out with the announcement. But we had three entries, and he was the only one that left a comment on the submission page, the survey submission page. And his comment was, loving the show. Keep up the great commentary from Skip and Sensi. So
very good. He actually said pretty much those exact words in Twitter to me, which was very nice. Very nice mm-hmm. of him to say.
Absolutely. So congratulations. And we will get your gift certificate sent out to the email address that you used on your submission. So congratulations to Skip and Sensi on winning that. PG said he'll be getting Witcha to get that to you. I actually got some feedback in my own personal email account from our friend Pat, who has given us feedback before. He said, I wanted to bring up that my lovely bride was disappointed with Renly. Not that he's gay, but in her mind, Renly was crazy, awesomely good-looking and dynamic. She admits to being in love with her vision of Renly, although a lot of that is her love for, a future character who was crazy in love with Renly. Anyway, Lisa wanted TV Renly to be awesome, and she finds him kind of weaselly. And that's Lisa's contribution to the conversation. Thanks, Pat.
And I think she's sort of mirroring what I was saying earlier about Renly. I like the Renly that in my mind more than what I've seen in the show so far.
Yeah.
And I see that there's I hear there's a direwolf moving in the background, so I like that.
He sent me a follow-up message saying, great work on the podcast, by the way. I appreciate all the hard work PG is doing, and I can certainly wait for the finished product. Best regards, Sir Podrick, instead of Pat, which I thought was really cute. So, and in that, he's referencing the fact that I had said, you know, well, we know that episode 4 is not out yet, but PG's working really hard to clean it up for us. It's been a little long. Yes, in case we didn't mention it earlier, that recording went on for 2 hours. We had a lot to talk about.
Yes.
PG's working hard to clean it up.
We're not going to go quite as long, but we did have a long episode tonight, and I'd like to thank my panelists on the round table here for sticking it out and doing this a day late, because my kids decided to stay up late last night. And we look forward to all of the awesomeness that we are sure will be in next week's episode. And then maybe we'll actually get to see the episode right after that on HBO Go, or at least some of us will. Because sorry. Time Warner has not signed on with HBO Go yet, but I'm not bitter. I might just drive up to Christiana's to watch it on her iPad.
There you go.
Or for that matter, if you're driving up here, I could just play it on my TV.
Crazy talk.
Maybe
that's just crazy.
Well, Christiana, expect a house full on Sunday. We're all coming to your house.
All right.
Again, everybody, our contact information and for comments and phone messages is in the outro. And as always, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
If you'd like to send feedback to Beyond the Wall, you can email us at btw@specficmedia.com. That's btw@specficmedia.com. Or you could send us a voicemail at 704-315-5884. Or you can comment on the web. Go to specficmedia.com, and there you'll find a shiny little button to click on that'll take you right to our page. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 Unported License. Feel free to share and remix. Just give us credit and don't charge money for it.
You guys ready?
Yep. Although I want to go on the record as saying Skype is stupid.
I don't know. I may have to go Tyrion.
You have that right to have that opinion, even though it's wrong.
Either Tyrion or Roz.
I don't know, that the woman that Jory was staring at right before he got his eye cut out. Yeah. That girl was hot.
At least he got to see something really good before he, yeah. You know.
Man, that sucks 10 seconds before you get killed.
So I created a new calendar called Balticon 2011, and I shared it with you two.
Is my picture in there? Am I January? Oh, I'm sorry. That's not the type of calendar you're talking about.
I was like, is your picture in there? What the fuck?
But Jory was cool. Man, he's out there saying, don't you talk to him like that. He's the hand of the king, motherfucker.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm being a bitch, I guess. Thanks for denying it, guys. Suck it.
I'm going to bring you a fucking spider.
Oh, that's not funny. I'll pee on your bed. I'll make sure I'm sitting on your bed the whole time, and I will pee when I see that spider. PG?
Yes.
Are you still brown chicken brown cowing?
Brown chicken? Oh, that's funny.
In your mind.
I'm sorry. I had this picture going on.
Of you and Chooch riding each other's humps.
Oh.
Shaving each other's chests so that you can.
Oh, you know, yeah. My armpits.
Everywhere.
It's because I got passionate.
Good morning, Westeros.
Now you're hot, baby. Christiana, say something terribly sexy.
Ooh.
Something terribly sexy.
Ooh.
Ooh, that was
nice. That's nice. Kind of like that. We'll have to record something later. I can't remember. Okay, this is off the record. Do I usually go through what everybody's was, or do I go through how many there were first?
No, we usually say what our guesses were, and then you say, and the final was, and then we're all wrong. Are you a serious boy with a serious cock? That's what I want to know.
No, I'm not.
What?
That was something Roz said to Dion.
Oh. It's like, that seemed like an odd question to ask Christiana, I got to say.
I was asking Chooch. I don't know what y'all were doing.
Well, Christiana answered.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, she did.
You're a very serious boy.
I'm not a boy.
Oh, yes, you are. A serious boy with a serious cock.
Yeah, Theon has a better body than you would have, that I thought from, like, the, you know, what they showed in earlier episodes. I mean, he was. Can we change the subject? Did I bring this up?
Yes, keep going.